Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today we're going to talk about church and men and women as well. Did you know that a typical congregation in the U.S. draws a crowd that is 61% female, 39% male? Maybe you see that as you're sitting in the pews, or maybe you'd be surprised by that statistic. In fact, Barna just came out with a study that said women are actually the backbone of a Christian congregation in America, not only in number, but also in influence. So we're going to chat a little bit about that today with our guest for today, who has written a book called Why Men Hate Going to Church. Is the church where men don't want to go? Is it a place where they'd like to avoid? And why is that? So we're going to try to dig deep into that question and then find out if women indeed are the backbone of a Christian congregation, then there must be something we can do to have some influence on getting men back into the church that doesn't involve any sort of nagging. My husband wanted me to make sure to say that. So we're going to chat a little bit about that with our guest for today. Let me introduce you to him, and then we will get started with the show. David Murrow is not a pastor, a professor, or a theologian. He says he's just a guy in the pews who's tired of seeing churches blow it with men. He's the director of Church for Men, an organization that helps congregations reconnect with the world's largest unreached people group. His first book, Why Men Hate Going to Church, was an instant Christian bestseller with some 100,000 copies in print. And his efforts have spawned articles in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, just to name a few. You may have seen him on PBS, NBC Nightly News, or the Fox News Channel talking about this gender gap. He lives in Alaska with his wife, three children, and a dachshund named Pepper. Welcome, David.
Good to be with you.
Well, I was telling you a little bit before the show that I read that book, Why Men Hate Going to Church, and I kept saying to myself, but what can I do? But how can I bring change? And so I was thrilled that your next book came out that said How Women Help Men Find God, giving some really practical advice to what women can do to actually help, because that's kind of what we do, right? We want to jump in and get involved.
You know, women are helpers. That's right.
I guess it's not a bad thing, but sometimes it probably can be. So what is it that was happening with the congregations that led you to say, wait a minute, I need to explore a little bit more and dig deeper into what's going on?
Well, it occurred to me about 15 years ago that every time I had ever been in a Christian gathering, other than a Promise Keepers event, there were always more women than men. In fact, that's why when I first went to a Promise Keepers rally in 1996 in Seattle, it was just shocking to be in a place, a Christian gathering, where there were more men than women. That had never happened to me in more than 20 years of church going. And so, you know, every committee meeting always had more women than men. Church itself had more women than men. Whenever there was a call for volunteers, there were always way more women than men. And the men who did go to church kind of seemed passive and bored. A lot of them were brought by their wives. You could tell it really wasn't their thing. It was their wives' thing. So I figured there had to be a book about it, and I looked it up, and there wasn't one. And then God kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you write it. And so I wrote that book, started writing it in 2001, got it published in 2005. And then, as you said in the introduction, there's now over 125,000 copies in print. It's in 12 languages. It's being used in seminaries around the world to train pastors to be more effective in reaching their men and boys. And what's exciting is the churches that are implementing the changes, the man-friendly changes that I talk about in the book and at my website, churchformen.com, are seeing genuine growth, not only in men, but also with women and children. And that's probably the most gratifying thing about the ministry that God has given me, is that the things that we are finding are really helping churches grow and reach more people.
So you write that 50 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation, that there wouldn't really have a need for a book like this, that men and women attended church in roughly equal numbers. And
yes.
Now that's
yes.
Not the same, correct?
Yeah, the high water mark for male church attendance was in the 1950s. The men came back from the war. It was the builder generation, and you had a generation of joiners. They joined bowling leagues. They joined Kiwanis clubs. And the main thing they joined was their local church. And men came back to church, and we saw a huge growth spurt. Christianity reached its zenith. You know, churches reached their high peak of attendance in the late 50s and mid-60s. But then the men began to abandon church in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and they're right now we're at a situation, as you said in the introduction, the average church in North America draws an adult crowd that is 61% female. And the really tragic thing is not just that men are not there, it's that when men depart, the church declines. The churches that are growing fastest have very small gender gaps. The churches that are dying tend to be 65 to 70% female. So the lack of men can predict church decline.
Well, is it true that if the man is choosing to go to church, that his family will naturally follow?
I think that there is a trend in that direction. There was a study done in Switzerland about 20 years ago, where in Switzerland, in the census form, they also track people's religious affiliation. And then they found that when the woman was faithful to church, but the man was not, only 2% of the time did her children grow up to be faithful churchgoers. When both were faithful, the children became religious 33% of the time. But what's interesting is when the man was the only faithful one and the wife wasn't, those children were about 50%, in the high 40s, 44 to 50% more likely to become churchgoers as adults. So dad has an outsized influence on what his children do. You know, mom can cajole, she can pray, she can preach, she can prod. But in the end, the kids tend to do what their fathers do. Fathers really are the spiritual leaders in the home, whether we like it or not.
Hmm. So is the issue of men not going to church, it doesn't really have anything to do with them disagreeing with maybe doctrine or Jesus himself or his ministry, but that it has more to do with the church service and maybe the environment?
Well, I mean, there are as many reasons as there are men. Of course, you know, there are men who are atheists. There are men who have been burned by the church. There are men who have doctrinal issues. But the thing is, women are just as likely to have been burned. They're just as likely to have doctrinal differences. So you can't say that, you know, the problem is atheism or doctrine or those sorts of things, because men and women approach those things in exactly the same manner. So what it comes down to, I believe, is that we have, without realizing it, we've created an environment on Sunday morning that is much more welcoming to a certain type of person, a person who is highly verbal, sensitive, nurturing, relational, loves children, speaks, you know, understands relationships and love and these sorts of things sort of instinctively. And although there are men and women in the population who relate to these things well, there tend to be more women that are gifted in these areas than men. And so that's why you see more women than men in church. If the church is casting a net for people who are relational, sensitive, nurturing, musical, who like teaching and verbal expression, you're going to catch more women in that net than you are men. So it's not that we're discriminating against men. It's that we've really kind of focused in on a type of person, and there are more women than men that fit that type.
So you even wrote a little bit about your own experience with getting a little disillusioned with church or feeling like you didn't really relate to what was going on there. Can you talk more about that?
Well, I served as an elder in a Presbyterian church. And if anybody who's ever served on a governing board of a church will know that it can be a very feminized decision-making process. Whereas in business, you know, we take a look at the hard numbers and we make a calculated decision based on what's going to be best for our business. In the church, the decisions are made based on people's feelings. How many people will be offended by this? How do we keep Sister Gladys happy? Mm-hmm. We talk everything to death. Everything is by consensus. It's just definitely a much more relational type decision-making process. And men get frustrated in that environment. You know, a man will feel very comfortable in a corporate boardroom because we make a decision and we move on. But in a church, it's much more of a bureaucracy. It's much more about people's feelings. And it actually led me to become quite frustrated with Christianity for a time and almost lost my faith over it.
So when you say almost lost your faith, what do you mean? What drew you away from it so much?
Well, I actually started looking into some other religions. I looked into Islam and Judaism, and you know, I was fascinated by how Islam, as you know, as rough as it is, was able to attract so many young men who would, you know, literally strap bombs to their bodies, you know, and die for this cause. Yet in Christianity, you can barely get a guy to show up on Sunday morning. So, you know, I looked, how are these religions able to have such a strong hold on their men? And, you know, I just realized the contrast of how feminized Christianity is in most of its manifestations as compared to Islam or these other fast-growing religions. Mormonism is another one that are very masculine, very much focused on masculine spirituality and the discipleship of men. And the contrast was just, it was stunning. It was like, oh, of course these religions have men. They really focus on their guys. But, you know, Christianity seems to be more focused on, you know, women and children.
Hmm. And yet you turned that corner and you did not lose your faith, correct?
Well, no, because, I mean, when Christ saved me at the age of 15, you know, it was real. It was genuine. I had the Spirit. You know, he invaded my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I admired the methods of these other religions, I couldn't abandon my God. And I came to see that it was not that Christianity was false in the way it's being practiced today. It's not apostasy. It's just culture. We are culture is feminizing and the church is at the head of that parade.
Well, and so that must have led you then to come up with and kind of an overview of why men hate going to church, that there are several things that are happening there that would lead it to feel a little bit more feminine. Can you talk about a couple of those things maybe that we don't recognize without having them pointed out?
Well, probably the biggest change since the 70s and 80s has been the movement away from traditional hymns toward praise and worship. And, you know, hymns had a good balance of masculine and feminine imagery. I mean, you had very feminine hymns like, you know, He Touched Me and I'm in the Garden Alone and these sorts of things. But there were also masculine hymns that spoke of battle and blood. You know, my favorite hymn as a kid was Onward Christian Soldiers and A Mighty Fortress Is Our God and, you know, On to Battle and these sorts of things. So there was a balance. When praise and worship came in, praise and worship music, 75% of praise and worship music is listened to by women. So the people who produced that music learned very quickly that battle and blood didn't really do it for their listeners. That the imagery that really satisfied female consumers was, you know, I'm desperate for you, I'm lost without you, let my words be few, Jesus, I'm so in love with you. They were songs that focused on our love relationship with Jesus. And although, you know, men do love Jesus, they don't usually think of being in love with him. And so the imagery really kind of fell flat. And now when I go to church, I speak in churches all over the country and all over the world, and I pay attention during the praise and worship time. I'll sit up front, and then I'll kind of turn around, and I'll look at who's singing. And the men usually have their mouths snapped shut during the praise and worship, because I simply cannot relate to the lovey-dovey lyrics of a lot of these songs. So yeah, that's just one way that we've sort of generally tilted Christianity toward women, and it's driven by commerce, the desire to sell CDs, to sell books, and because women are the biggest consumers of Christian products.
What about, you had written a little bit about just the messages that we tend to concentrate on in a Protestant church of Jesus' teaching, that they're really many of his softest messages.
Well, that's really true. I mean, when's the last time you heard a good old sermon on hell? We've just really kind of gone away, even though Jesus spoke a lot of punishment and, you know, woe unto you Pharisees and these sorts of things. We really kind of sidestep those things and we focus mainly on God's love. You know, we're Gospel of John people. We're Fruit of the Spirit people. And, you know, although that comforts the congregation and certainly keeps hate mail from coming in, what it fails to do is it fails to fire the imaginations of young men who are animated by, you know, battle and blood and conflict and these sorts of uncomfortable things that we find a lot of in the Bible, but we tend to soft pedal. And then the other thing is the dominant metaphors that we use for Christianity. The number one way Christians describe their faith today is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Yet that phrase never appears in the Bible. It's never a metaphor that Jesus uses. He never refers to our walk with God as a relationship. Yet today it's the number one way we describe the gospel because it frames the gospel in terms of a woman's deepest desire, which is a relationship. The example I always use when I talk is the difference between the movies I watch versus the movies my wife watches. She rents movies about relationships. They're called chick flicks, right? Mm-hmm. The whole point of the film is to find a relationship. whereas the movies I watch are about a hero saving the world against impossible odds. The point of the movie is salvation, saving, you know, people. So the gospel used to be about saving, but now the gospel is more about a relationship. And so if the punchline of the gospel is come have a relationship with a man who's in love with you, you're going to get more women than men, because that metaphor appeals to women.
So are there churches that are actually doing it right and able to engage men? And if so, what is it that they're doing that's engaging men?
Well, the good news is that you don't have to turn your church into a monster truck rally to get men. You don't have to paint an artificially macho posture onto your church. You have to simply let Jesus be Jesus, you know, preach the hard things as well as the soft things. And here's the thing, when you do that, you know, women respond just as well as men. But you have to, and the other thing is you have to stop artificially feminizing your presentation and your decor. You know, so many churches I walk into, they have sort of that Victorian ladies parlor feel with the quilts and the banners and the handmade felt banners and the ribbons and the lace and the flowers on the communion table. I mean, it definitely, you can tell the place has been decorated by women in their 50s and 60s. It just has that look, that grandma look to it. So when young men walk into that space, they immediately say, this is a grandma place, and they fail to engage. So there, back to your original question, yes, there are many, many churches. The hallmark of the megachurch has been to strip out all that homespun decor to create sort of a bare sanctuary type, you know, just sort of a theater type setting, so that men come in. You know, men understand theaters, they understand arenas, they feel comfortable there. Most pastors that are successful in reaching men, though not all, are male themselves. They're guys with big vision, guys who preach to the men. And so, you know, yes, there are a lot of churches out there that are getting this message, that are manning up the music, you know, that are stripping away some of the false femininity that we've placed on the gospel. And they're being rewarded with growth in numbers, growth in mission, and growth in contributions.
So is it possible for a church to kind of man up their worship service without driving women away?
Well, here's the thing. When you create a man-friendly environment, women are instinctively drawn to it. The example I like to give is if I'm out working on the house and I turn to my wife and I say, honey, hold my hammer for a minute. You know, she doesn't. She doesn't think twice about that. She's happy to be seen in public holding a hammer. But and then if we go to the store, my wife, she wants to try on some clothes, and she says, honey, hold my purse for a minute. I'm completely terrified to be seen in public holding a purse. Because here's the thing. Women do masculine, but men don't do feminine. Women are drawn to guy things. You know, when I remember in the 70s, you know, almost weekly, it was the first woman to, you know, fill in the blank, to break down some gender barrier. You go, sister. You know, there was a lot of support among women to do guy things. But I can tell you, I never heard about the first guy to win the Pillsbury Bake Off, or, you know, the first guy to, you know, do some feminine thing. Guys are not proud of being feminine. So if your church is kind of creates a masculine vibe, what happens is women are fascinated by that, men are fascinated by that, young men, children are fascinated by that. But if your church kind of gives off an old lady vibe, which is what probably half to two-thirds of our traditional, you know, 100, 150-member churches give off, then you pretty much just have the old ladies. And I think that's probably the main reason we're seeing 3,000 churches a month, or I'm sorry, 3,000 churches a year closing their doors, is because those churches have forgotten how to reach young men. And if you read the Gospels, it was all about engaging the young men. Jesus had 12 young men at his side. And if we don't have that key demographic, we will not have dynamism in our churches.
Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how to engage those young men and men of all generations in the church, and talk about what women can do to kind of help that along, if anything. We're talking with David Murrow today. He's an author and speaker and has done extensive research around why men hate going to church, and also on what women can do to help those men find God. We'll be back in a moment. ¶¶ Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're talking with author David Murrow today. He's the author of How Women Help Men Find God and also Why Men Hate Going to Church. He's done extensive research on both of those subjects. And if you would like to get a copy of his book, we would love to put one in your hands. You can shoot us an email on the Connecting Faith website. You can just click on email and shoot me that line, and we will make sure that we get you in contact with one of the books that he has graciously provided. So, David, we were talking a little bit just about what churches can do to kind of man up their worship services without driving women away. Can a church go too far in kind of ignoring any of the needs or worship styles or anything that women would have, or is that not really possible?
Well, you know, I'm sure it's possible, but I've never heard of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if a church did go too macho, you know, artificially macho, which is not what I'm advocating. You know, as I said, it's not about turning church into a monster truck rally. It's not about, you know, painting Jesus with guns in his hands. It's not, you know, we don't need to artificially masculinize the gospel. The gospel in its natural form is plenty masculine. But I think if the church did go over the macho, you know, too far that way, I think they would have a chorus of objections from both men and women to deal with. So I don't think that there's a lot of danger in that. I think we just so naturally move toward the feminine in our worship. That's the far greater danger and the much bigger issue in our churches today.
So it's really not necessarily about churches having groups or events or something that is specifically for men, but just really more an overall feel and direction that a church takes just on their regular weekend services.
See, that's a great way of putting it, Joe. What I always tell churches is, you know, it's fine to have a men's ministry or a men's program, but 80% of your guys will never attend it. But 100% of your guys come on Sunday morning. So it's very important to get Sunday morning right and then start a men's program if you want to. But it's interesting, some of the most effective churches that reach tons of men do not even have a men's ministry program. They work very hard to engage their men on Sunday morning because they know that's where the guys are. There's the visiting men come on Sunday morning, the women who drag their husbands come on Sunday morning, and you know, the things that you can do, sometimes they're so simple. I know a woman who was praying for her husband for 10 years. He just got tired of church, stopped going, wouldn't go. She's constantly asking him to go. Well, one Sunday he finally goes to church, and she's just praying the whole time. Well, that particular Sunday, the pastor gets up in front of the church, and he's got a golf club in his hand. The pastor's an avid golfer, and he's talking about being in the sweet spot with God, talking about how if you barely miss the ball a little high or a little low, you're going to shank it. But if you're in the sweet spot, you know, you'll go far down the fairway. So he's got this big old driver in his hands. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Her husband is an avid golfer. He was so excited coming out of church because he'd finally heard a message that he could relate to. He understood the metaphor. It resonated with his heart. It got him excited. So he was there the next week and the next week and the next week. Pretty soon he's volunteering. He's in a Bible study group. He's being discipled. He's a kinder husband and father. I mean, just huge life change in this man's heart.
We're talking with David Murrow today. He is an author and a speaker. He's written a book called How Women Help Men Find God. We've been chatting a little bit about why women need to help men find God, and yet we're going to get into some more practical advice on what women can do, how they can pray, what kind of influence could we possibly have on getting our men to not only go to church, but to enjoy it as well. So if you have someone that you've been praying for, maybe you'll want to listen to this second half of the program to get some really great tips on how to help along that process. If you'd like a copy of David's book, we have a few. You can go to the My Faith Radio page and click on Connecting Faith. You can shoot us an email. We'll get one of those in your hands as soon as we can. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. It's great to have you joining us today. Well, on a given Sunday, 25% of married church-going women will worship without their husbands. And maybe this is a startling statistic for you, or maybe you're part of that. Why is that? We've been chatting with David Murrow a little bit about why men hate going to church. In fact, he believes so much in the subject that he wrote a book called exactly that, and a second book called How Women Help Men Find God. David, I'd love to just take some time to maybe give us some ideas on what can we do if we have a man in our lives who hates going to church, whether that's a teenage son or maybe a young man, a husband, a father. What is it that we can start to do to maybe encourage them?
Well, the simplest thing, I have three words: don't prod, pray.
Mm-hmm.
The most effective thing you can do is pray, and not on your own, but with other sisters who are in your situation. I can guarantee you that in your church, every woman in your church is praying for at least one man who doesn't know the Lord or who needs a closer walk with the Lord. So the number one thing that I encourage women to do is to get together with other women in their church specifically to pray for the men in their lives. And I encourage women to bring photographs of the men they are praying for and drop those photos into the circle one at a time and focus intense prayer on those individuals and to physically manifest who you're praying for. And we have found that this is probably the most effective thing you can do as an individual woman, is just simply to concentrate prayer on your man, because prayer is powerful. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you need to do is you need to take, if you listen to the first half of the show, you heard some of the critiques of the modern church, how it's become feminized. You need to take a really good, long, hard look at your church and ask yourself, is this the kind of church that my man, my husband, my father, my son, et cetera, is this the kind of place where they can find God? And, you know, a lot of churches really are not very good. They're pretty inept when it comes to reaching men. They're very much more focused on women and children's ministries, not men. So, you know, a lot of times a woman will, I've heard stories of women who their husband wants to try another church. You know, he's not a churchgoer, but he says, you know, hey, my buddy Al goes to this church. Maybe I'll go with him sometime. And a woman will go, oh, well, that's not my church. I'm not going with you. You know, these are classic mistakes that women sometimes make. If your husband doesn't go to church and he says he wants to go to church, you go with him. You know, grit and bear it. It's oftentimes, you know, I know you're uncomfortable going to another church, or you may disagree with the doctrine at that church, but just go. Just be open-minded. See what God may be doing. You know, I'm not saying that you need to give up your faith or your doctrines or any things you believe, but you do need to go with your husband and let him, you know, explore the spiritual landscape. The other thing is, there are some non-threatening introductions to church, like the Alpha program, where if you can get him to go with you to that. Or there's another very exciting outreach called Life Tree Cafe, which is not a church at all, but it's a place where Christians come to gather and discuss contemporary issues. They're finding a lot of people who are completely unchurched come to Life Tree. They're reluctant at first. By the end of the meeting, they're absolutely hooked. They love it. They keep coming back. And so there are a lot of really good things and ways to reach out to men. And I do try to keep a list on my website, churchformen.com, with ideas for things that women can do and things they can take their husbands to.
I love this dedication that you put in your book. It says, "She who prays for a man but sees no change, she whose son has abandoned the faith, and she who searches for a Christian mate but finds none, there is hope."
Yes, there is hope.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that to the woman who feels like nothing is happening.
Yes. Well, I mean, and Jesus talked about that with the persistent widow and the judge. I mean, there's just, it's very important to remain, to keep praying, to keep, but don't prod. That's the other thing. Women will sometimes try to manipulate their men into following Jesus. I have heard women who have withheld things from, you know, if you don't go to church, I'm not going to sleep with you. This is what, you know, wives say to husbands. Let me tell you, withholding sex is not a good evangelistic strategy.
Mm.
You know, I've heard of women trying to, you know, manipulate their husbands, drag their husbands to church, drag their sons to church. I don't think there's a lot of point in that. You don't want their bodies in church and their hearts to be elsewhere. So you need to be praying for their hearts, and you need to, you need to take a good, hard look at your church and say, is this church the kind of church where my husband can find God? And if it's not, it might be time to change churches. And I know that's a very personal decision. That's fraught. You know, is this God's will? My friends will be gone. I can tell you about 15 years ago, my faith was literally dying. We moved to another church. My wife did not want to abandon her friends, but this new church was so much more welcoming to me as a man, and it really invigorated my faith. And my wife was willing to make the sacrifice and go over to this new church, even though she had to leave her friends behind. She had to leave everything that was familiar behind. She went. She followed me. And, of course, now in her new church, we love it. She's got just as many friends as the old church. But it was a painful thing for her, but she was willing to do that for me, and I appreciate that so much. And I think sometimes women, you know, kind of they want their religion their way, and it's part of, you know, being willing to do whatever God wants you to do. It might be time to move on. So I'm not suggesting, I'm not telling you to quit your church, but I'm saying, you know, you really need to pray about these things and make sure that your church is the kind of place where your husband or your father, or your brother, whatever, can find God.
Well, you also, besides the church, you devote a whole chapter to the way that we are acting, that our words whisper, you say, but our life shouts. What are some things that, and that's, you're talking about getting personal. I mean, a lot of those are very personal, to take a really hard look at how is it that we are speaking? What is it that we are doing? Or how is it that we are acting that's either bringing our men to know God or want to be in church, or wanting them to run far away? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes women use Christianity as a way of controlling their families, you know, or keeping their families safe. You know, I have a friend named Heather who lived a very safe Christian life. She was a, you know, church librarian and taught, you know, took care of kids in the nursery and cooked for potlucks and just kind of did a very safe Christian life. Well, then about 20 years ago, the Spirit really got a hold of Heather and led her to some more adventurous ministry. He led her to minister to AIDS orphans in Uganda. She was ministering to street prostitutes. I mean, just really dangerous stuff she was doing. Well, her husband, Carl, who had never had any interest in the church, suddenly started to pay attention, because her faith had transitioned from something that keeps people safe to something that causes people to be in danger. And men are drawn to danger and adventure. So Carl started going to church to find out what was changing in his wife's life. So simply the posture, the changing of her faith from something that keeps people safe to something that really is a dangerous adventure, intrigued her husband enough that he actually walked the aisle and became a follower of Jesus and followed him the rest of his days. So he passed away recently. So women can use church as a safety net, or what I call a life preserver, you know, some sort of a safety thing, or they can see the gospel as an adventure and live an adventurous Christian life. And I think the second is much more intriguing to men.
Well, and you wrote, I love this part. You said that Peter concluded his advice with a little phrase that says, without being frightened by any fear, you write, a fearless woman is irresistibly attractive to a man.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And, unfortunately, you know, well, I mean, can I just say it? And my wife will say this. She ministers to women, and she'll just come home and shaking her head. And she goes, these Christian women are just bound up in fear. They're afraid of the world. They're afraid of rock music. They're afraid of this. They're afraid of that. I mean, they listen to a radio station, a Christian radio station, whose slogan is safe for the whole family. Well, you think about it, you're driving around in the car with your son and the radio comes on and says, safe for the whole family. What's he going to think about Christianity when he's 13 or 14 and he's desperate to be dangerous? The first thing that's going to go into the dumpster is Christianity. Mm. So, yeah, women need to be very careful about the messages they're sending to the men in their lives. If they are talking about Christianity as something that keeps us safe, particularly with young men, you'll see no interest.
So how can women talk to men about God? I mean, it would be, it seems like it may be disrespectful to have a conversation with your husband about something that they may not be interested in doing, or even your teenage son. So how is it that a woman can talk to their men about God?
Well, Jesus told us to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And I think that applies in this situation. You know, women need to be wise about how they bring up spiritual subjects. I think it's perfectly acceptable if a man asks a question to talk about God. You know, if you go to church and your husband doesn't, your husband says, "How was church?" Make an honest assessment. Well, you know, it was okay. Or just surprise them a little bit. Again, you want to speak. Whenever you have a chance to speak of the gospel, speak of it as a dangerous mission rather than a personal relationship, something that challenges rather than comforts, because, you know, at the heart of the gospel, that's what it is. Just be careful not to kind of over Jesus your conversation. I mean, if I tell a story in the book about a boy that I know, a woman, and she had a young son, and he brings up a question of, he saw this movie, and the priest in the movie said, because the person had committed suicide, he's going to die and go to hell. Well, Mom, is that true? Well, at that point, the mother has a choice. She can launch into a 10,000-word explanation about the doctrine of grace and eternal salvation and stuff like that. But what I advise women to do is just ask more questions. Well, why are you asking that, son? Well, there was a kid at church at our school that committed suicide, he said. And I was wondering if he went to hell. Ah, so now you know what he's talking about. So just keep teasing him out. Get him talking. One of the interesting things about men is one of the best witnesses to men is to let them talk and do as little talking as possible until they ask the question, the key question, question about salvation or eternity or, you know, my walk with God. You just have to be wise in how you talk about these sorts of things. Women tend to, you know, they take that verse, faith comes by hearing, and they think, oh, I've just got to talk more about Jesus. Well, no, necessarily don't. The key with men is to get them talking about Jesus and find out what they think, and then you can bring in the true gospel around the backside to surprise them. And that's actually been a very effective way to witness to men, in my observation.
Well, and you even wrote down, put down your red pencil so that you're not actually giving them a three-point diatribe about what everything means, but allowing them to think as you're talking and ask questions as you're talking. I love that advice because sometimes I do feel like I'm supposed to have the whole answer.
Well, I can guarantee you, if you talk to a person, man or woman, you talk to a person who doesn't know Jesus, talk to them about the faith, they're going to say some of the craziest things. You know, you've heard these sorts of things. Well, I just believe everybody goes to heaven. Or, they're just going to say things that are completely unbiblical. And your impulse at that point is to say, well, the Bible says, thus saith the Lord. And but the answer is, the best way to handle that is, well, why do you think that? You know, ask them a question. You want to keep them talking, especially with men, because men are not natural talkers. So when you find yourself in a situation where you're sharing a faith with another man, the goal is not to talk them into the kingdom. The goal is to keep them talking about their faith so they reveal their heart. And once their heart is out in the open, then the Lord can work on it. Then you can speak love into that heart. Then you can make the gospel, make an attractive presentation of the gospel. So that's my big advice to women. Two words. My biggest witnessing advice to women is two words. Zip it. Hmm. Let the man talk.
And if they do, we're so happy.
Yes, yes.
Well, David, we have to take a quick break, but we will be right back to talk a little bit more about even sharing faith or how to lead boys or men to faith. You write a great chapter on that. I'd love to give our listeners some great ideas on how they can do that. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're talking today with author and speaker David Murrow. He is not a pastor, a professor, or a theologian. He says he's just a guy in the pews who's tired of seeing churches blow it with men. So we've been chatting quite a bit about what it is that churches do or don't do to not be attractive to men, and what it is that women can do to help kind of influence, or instead of pushing their men into the doors of the church, maybe just being an influence on the strong, silent side. Correct, David?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
How about when we're talking with our teenage sons? I know that there are so many statistics that say that a lot of teenage boys do turn from their faith, either when they go to college or even just late in their teenage years. Is there anything that we can do as women to help them find God or stay connected?
Well, the absolute best thing for teenage boys is to find them a male mentor that they look up to and respect. And I think this has been pretty much the rubric of youth group. The whole purpose of youth group for the past 50 years has been to connect young males with a youth leader, some sort of a guy that they who knows the Lord and who will lead them in spiritual things. Unfortunately, we're seeing a couple of trends that are warring against youth group as a technique for reaching young men. The first is the praise and worship movement has pretty much taken over youth group. When I was a kid, youth group was a couple of silly songs, and then we were on to the talk. Youth groups nowadays will often go 15, 20, or 25 minutes of music. And most young men, unless they are musicians, are not into that. So we're seeing a big attrition of young men from youth group. The more it becomes a rock concert, the less young men are interested in participating in it. The second trend we're seeing is a lot of, when I was a kid, again, youth leaders were all male. 100% of youth leaders were male. Because young men are looking for a male role model. Most young men will not follow a female leader. Now there's a trend. Seminaries are actually producing as many female youth leaders as male. And a lot of churches have given their youth programs over to female youth leaders with predictable results. Most female-led youth groups run about 75% female because young men, again, do not respect female leaders. I wish it was different, but that's just the way it is. So back to the original question, as far as young men, the number one thing you can do is get your young man into the presence of a male youth leader, some sort of a male mentor he looks up to and respects. That is the thing that will grow and preserve his faith more than anything that you can do as a woman. The second thing is you want to start early with boys. For example, you want to be putting men into your boys' lives, men who worship God and who walk with him, men of strong faith. And here's another little tip I give women. A woman should never give a Bible to a boy. It should always be given to him by a man he looks up to and respects. So even if you're a single mom, you want to get your boy a Bible, you never want to give that to him. You want to find a man in your church who will give him the Bible and tell him how important it is for a man to read it. And that will make a huge difference on whether he reads that Bible or not.
So how about the women who have men in their lives, whether it's their husband or otherwise, who do not want to participate at all in helping to raise their child to know the Lord?
Very common situation, and a tragic one as well. Boys are very perceptive, and they can tell when mom is driving the spiritual bus. Lots of times, you know, the man will go to church, but that's it. And the woman is involved in seven different ministries. The church is her life. And so the boys look at that and they say, well, you know, dad goes, but he doesn't really care about it. I don't care about it either. So very difficult situation. Again, you need a lot of prayer. You need a ton of support. You need to be gathering with the women who are in your situation and be praying for those men regularly. You know, I've got pages and pages of practical suggestions for things that you can do as far as, you know, how you talk about the gospel a little bit. Mm-hmm. I remember there was one of the stories I told in the book was about a woman who had come to faith in Christ, but her husband hadn't. And she used to read the Bible. But when he came into the room, she put her Bible away as a show of respect to him. He wasn't a Christian. She didn't keep the Bible out. She put it away and paid attention to him. You know, a lot of times men get jealous of Jesus. Women get so involved in the church. They're involved in so many ministries. They have a secret crush on the church or maybe on the pastor. And, you know, they're always talking about how wonderful the pastor is or how wonderful Jesus is. I mean, you think about Jesus. He's perfect, right? How are you supposed to compete with Jesus? So men actually become jealous of their wives, and their wives become obsessed with church and Christianity. So this wise woman I was speaking of, whenever her husband was around, she put her Bible away. She paid attention to her husband. She showed him the proper respect. Eventually, he came to know the Lord, and his name is Lee Strobel, and he became a pastor at Willow Creek Church in Chicago, and is now one of the most influential and respected names in Christian journalism. Mm-hmm. So it's important how you handle the gospel around your unbelieving man. But, you know, the answer is there are ways to do it, and you can be a positive influence for Christ in your man's life.
Talk a little bit about the Christian bubble and why that's not an effective way to help your family, lead your family to faith.
Well, it's a tough one. It's a real balancing act. You know, you want to insulate your children from harmful influences. But by the same token, if Christianity is perceived as something that keeps you safe, that keeps you from fun, that's overly protective and overly restrictive, you can cause a rebellion and a backlash in your children, particularly in your boys. You know, as I said earlier, safe for the whole family. You know, that's a terrible slogan for a radio station for your boys to listen to, because boys are all about danger. They're not about safety. So when we create this protective bubble around our boys, we set them up for rebellion. And it's a real balancing act, knowing how much freedom to give them. I think most parents do it pretty well. You know, some of them are still pretty set up a situation where we make worldly things look attractive because we are so restrictive.
Well, and it seems that the less opportunity I give my sons for making their own decisions, then the less able they are to make good decisions because they haven't had the proper practice.
In fact,
my 12-year-old just finished reading an article in Newsweek, and he said, "Mom, I figured out why I've been doing such stupid things. Did you know that a teenage boy's brain does not develop to think about consequences?" And that's why I left my bike at the club for 3 days and why I left the garage door open. That's why I broke that thing. So he was starting to put it together. But when I think about those things as they apply to faith, then I know I need to start giving him the opportunity to make the mistakes. And then you can truly talk about how Jesus would react to those things.
Oh, I know. And some women completely freak out, like if their son gets invited to go to a Mormon church or a Jewish synagogue or whatever, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, you can't go. That's enemy territory. We can't let him go. I mean, he's not going to convert on one. You know, let him explore the spiritual landscape. You can't control his faith anyway. But then when he comes home, it's going to be a great conversation time. See it as an opportunity. You know, well, what did you learn there? What did you think about it? You know, well, why did you like that? Or why was that boring or whatever?" I mean, you got to entrust your kids to God. And, you know, if they want to go to another church in another denomination or another youth group, don't freak out. You know, let them go. And then use the opportunity to speak up for what's true and right and good and holy. And, you know, trust God with the outcome.
Well, what I just have one more question I'd love to ask is, you wrote a little bit about being a verbal witness, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be talking to our men about God, but to be a witness in other ways than verbally. Can you just give that last tip on what we can do that's going to encourage our men to really seek God?
Well, I think there's a lot of things we've talked about, you know, the importance of, you know, focusing on the adventure of following Christ, not nagging. We haven't even got into that yet, but it's so important that you not nag your man, that you not withhold things because he's not a Christian. Show him the proper respect. With your boys, you know, speak of the gospel as an adventure. There's just so many little things that women can do to gently and positively influence their men toward God. And, you know, that's why I wrote the book. That's why I have the ministry I do, is because I do want to see more men walking with the Lord. I want to see more men praying with their wives. That's a real good one right there.
Yes.
You know, a lot of women long to pray with their husbands, but, you know, women tend to be more verbal and their prayers are longer. And so what I advise women to do is, you know, if you pray with your husband and he prays eight words, you pray eight words. Don't outshine him when it comes to Christian things. And, you know, I married a Baptist preacher's daughter. That woman can pray the paint off the walls. But she had to learn early on. When we prayed together, she matched my cadence. She matched my number of words. And she stopped intimidating me, and I started to pray.
Where can people find more information if they want to delve into some of these resources that you have, David?
My main website is churchformen.com. I also have a website called speakingtomen.com, but it's under construction right now. So just go to churchformen.com. There's plenty of good resources there.
Okay. And again, if you'd like a copy of David's book, How Women Help Men Find God, we would love to get that in your hands. You can just go to the My Faith Radio website, click on Connecting Faith, and shoot us an email with your name and why you'd like a copy of the book. We would love to be able to minister to you in that way. And David, thank you so much for providing those books for our listeners. Very, very generous of you.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. It's been my pleasure.
Absolutely. Great to have you on the show today. And we will do our best to help men find God as women of faith. So grateful to have you here. You've been listening to Connecting Faith.